Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. And today is Monday, the 29th of October, 2007. We're 2 days from Halloween. And in terms of what's happening in the world, boy, have we got a few things to talk about tonight. I'd like to focus, but I'm not going to get to it early. I want to talk a little bit tonight about the, well, it's related to FISA and the warrantless wiretapping stuff that the Bush administration has gone on to, but it's also a few other areas in which, in the wake of September 11th, they have, well, there's no polite way to say it, broken the law. And they've talked telecom companies into breaking the law, too. And now they want Congress to give the telecom companies retroactive immunity, meaning the telecom companies have been called in front of Congress and said, we can't tell you what we did exactly, but the government asked us to do it. And the Bush administration won't tell them what they asked them to do. But they say, but give them immunity from prosecution for anything they might have done that violates the law. Do you understand how that doesn't compute? Anyway, we'll get to that stuff in a little while. I want to talk about a few topics in the news and maybe an angle on it that you folks haven't seen unless you're reading fairly closely. So the California wildfires have been big in the news. You've probably seen some of the homes that have burned down. You know, I don't often go on the web just to look for pictures of something. I did when the Abu Ghraib photos came out. I wanted to know what exactly that was the extent of that, including the dead bodies that they wheeled out of there, which didn't get much play. Everybody talks about being, you know, a prank. But I wanted to see what the damage looked like in California from the fires. And so I went out to a couple of websites of newspapers out in the L.A., San Diego area and looked at photos. And there are thousands of them. Most of these newspapers allow readers or viewers on the internet to upload their photos. So I looked at mostly the newspaper photos that were posted up on a couple of newspaper sites, but there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of photos that people posted. And you just can't look through them all. There's that many. Anyway, as you may know, the fires are substantially contained at this point. As of the weekend, there were really five main fires, and two of them were essentially completely contained, 100% or 87% by Saturday on a couple, actually by Friday on a couple of these. And then the other three are at least 50% contained, in some cases more. So that's good news. The interesting thing about it is that there are lessons for prevention. The Washington Post had a great article today about housing developments that survived unscathed. And so they talked about four particular housing developments, Rancho Santa Fe and three others, where people saw that the fire went right through their area and burned everything around them and expected to go in there and find their homes gone. All the homes are still there. Why do you ask? Why do you ask? No. Why are they still there, you ask? Because the townships involved required the builders, and the builders required the homeowners and the homeowners association to pay to install certain anti-fire technology and to set it up so that they wouldn't get burned out. Now, this is interesting because I have a friend who does a radio show on this station, WEBR, who talks a lot about homeowners association. That's what her show is about. I'll have to ask her about this one and what she thinks of this, because this is a case where the strict requirements of the homeowners association meant that homeowners had to adhere to certain kinds of things. And when they did, it preserved their homes. So let me walk through a little bit of this. First of all, the background. There was a researcher, actually a geography professor from University of California at Riverside, who compared the land in northern Mexico that's very similar. This is a desert area in the San Diego suburb areas, and actually the Los Angeles suburb areas. I guess they call it high desert in places. But it's similar to land in Mexico, and he took aerial photos of all this land in Mexico, and it turns out that fires spread pretty naturally in the very dry desert area. When vegetation gets old, like more than 30 years growth, fire can sweep through certain areas. But the fire stops when it gets to the young growth areas. That is something that had burned in the last 10 to 15 years or so, because that is too young and too green. There aren't enough big trees, things, big bushes, things like that, that have dried out in the late summer and that can catch fire. So he applied what he learned about that to supplied that information. He did the research, wrote it up, and supplied the information to homeowners associations and to local townships. And basically, they have a certain set of rules. So these are relatively pricey gated developments, and they've been in the planning stages for a long time. This is around the Lake Hodges area. And they have strict new building and fire codes, and they have regular inspections. They require that your eaves be boxed. You have to have fire sprinklers. I assume those are sprinklers that sprinkle water on your roof during a big fire, but I'm not sure. Maybe just all over the property. Spark arresters on chimneys, that's so sparks don't get out of your chimney, and non-combustible roofing materials that are Class A rated. And your landscaping has to be fire-resistant plants, sage, monkey flower, things like that. And they went through and they also told people that in existing developments, things like you need to take down those palm trees. Those will go up like balls of fire if there's a fire. And one neighbor did, and they did everything they needed to do with their landscaping and the other things that was suggested. And the neighbor next door didn't. He left his palm trees in front of his house. When they got back, this is an older development, keep in mind. When they got back, the neighbor that didn't take down his palm trees, his house was burned to the ground. And the neighbor who did all the things that the fire marshals asked him to do, their house is still there. So this is great news. It means that people are learning how to live in the desert. Here's what happens. What was happening with these wildfires is that now that people are living in the desert, we got millions of people living in the desert, never intended to support, you know, tracts of houses. At least nature didn't plan it. And so now fire suppression means that we put fires out very quickly. So the goal is put a fire out before it can spread at all. And when you do that, you don't get the pattern you get in Mexico, which is these things, areas that are got 30 years of growth burn off, and then new growth starts. And that stuff is not burnable for a while. For the last 50 years in the L.A. San Diego area, they've been putting all these fires out. So as long as you know you've got that combustible areas, those combustible areas in the woods, in the forests, in this dry area of desert, then, I say woods and forests, it's not conventional woods and forests, it's sagebrush and all this other stuff. But the principle is, you have to let it burn occasionally. And if you're going to put houses there, you have to make them fireproof. And it matters what vegetation you put around. It matters how close you build houses to the edges of other vegetation. It matters that you have sprinklers, all that stuff. So there's a couple of interesting things about this. One is, I mentioned the homeowners associations. You know, a lot of people rail against their homeowners associations, but in fact, strict adherence to the codes here saved people's million-dollar homes. The second thing is, this all starts with the local government requiring it. So for everybody who thinks that, oh, we're overregulated, keep in mind that a lot of times regulations are for our own good, and they make a lot of sense. It's just that if you were to tell people, we recommend you do this, a percentage would and a percentage wouldn't, no matter how logical it is. It's like with seatbelt laws. You know, there were a certain percentage of people that protested seatbelt laws when they came out, basically saying, we should have individual freedom, and if somebody wants to ride without their seatbelts, they should be allowed to. And you read things in the paper. There was a kid killed. He was thrown out of his car and killed just the other day. It was in the paper in this area. And he didn't have a seatbelt on. I didn't have to get to that part of the article before I knew that's what happened. But when we put a seatbelt law in place in various states, compliance rose from about an average of 58% to 75%. So just putting the regulation on the books, they're not running people in and arresting people for not having your seatbelt on particularly, but knowing that it's the law, more people buckle up, it saves lives. So I guess that makes me a liberal, I guess, because I don't mind the government telling me that there's certain things I ought to do, and they're so important, we're going to make them laws. We're going to make them rules and ask you to obey them. Like laws about speeding, we don't really obey them. But if there were no laws about speeding, people would be out there driving crazy speeds and causing more accidents. In any case, the last piece I want to talk about on the fires in California is this whole episode. I don't know if you heard about this, but there is a FEMA official. In fact, it was the agency's number two man who held a fake news conference. So the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, made famous by President Bush when he said, "You're doing a heck of a job, Brownie." And then they fired Brownie a couple of days later. They withdrew him from New Orleans and took him back to sent him back to Washington. And FEMA held a press conference in the midst of these California wildfires. And the number two official, Harvey Johnson, Vice Admiral Harvey Johnson Jr., the deputy administrator, I think it was him that held it. He released a statement here. I think he did. Yes, I could be wrong about this, because I don't have the article from today's paper in which he was released from his job. I don't think I do. In any case, FEMA held this conference, and they had fake reporters. They had FEMA employees asking the questions. They called the press conference with only a few minutes' notice, so that the real reporters couldn't get out to where the thing was taking place, so they gave them an audio hookup so they could listen to it, and they had fake reporters asking phony questions. Well, first FEMA apologized, and then they got rid of the employee who pulled that little stunt. So that's good to know. Let's see. Oh, we've got a sheriff running for office here. Alleman is his name. He's the Republican trying to unseat the current Loudoun County Sheriff, Stephen Simpson, in November. And he admitted that he's fixed tickets for friends of fellow officers. Quote, "I fixed many tickets," said Gregory Alleman. Interesting. "I would go to them and say, 'Do you have a problem getting rid of it?'" This is to the officer that gave away, that gave out the ticket. "And he never did this for anything more serious than speeding." And he pointed out that ticket fixing is, quote, "a pretty common occurrence in law enforcement." I'm sure it is, but they don't talk about it much. What's interesting is that he's running a campaign promising to, quote, "restore integrity to the sheriff's office." I guess being honest about your ticket fixing is one way to do it. Oh, there's a little article in the Post about how I don't usually jump into international affairs, but Putin and his government, the Kremlin, is now seeking to expand its reach into the Internet. It hasn't paid much attention to the Internet as it took control of broadcasting outlets, but it's starting now. And when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about law enforcement here in D.C. They have a new siren that's making quite a rumble. Hi, I'm Andy Finn.
You know, even if someone handed me $1 million this morning, I'd still be doing my radio show on WEBR. Why? Because I have commitment. I have dedication. Plus, I signed a contract. Now, if you'll do the same, I'll have one more dedicated listener. Don't worry, you can void your contract if I ever get obsessed with liberals or gays, the flag, the pledge, embryonic stem cells, the UN, illegal immigrants, missing white women, or the country of France. So tune in the Andy Pin Show on WEBR, Mondays at 10 p.m. Hey, if you had $1 million, you could buy a radio station.
Well, that is so true. We are back on the Andy Pin Show on WEBR Radio. Today's October 29th, 2007, and the Washington police have a new siren. And this is interesting. I wish I had my friend John Clark on tonight, because John likes talking about the electromagnetic spectrum and frequencies. Well, this is a low-frequency vibration. So there are some experimental sirens on police cars in Washington right now, and they are going to get them on. They got them on about 50 cars now, and they're going to have them on 650 cars. I'm sorry, all 767 patrol cars that are marked eventually, within 4 years. And what it does is it emits a very low frequency sound wave that vibrates everything around it, so that if a police car is coming up behind you, you not only would hear this high-pitched siren, but if for some reason you had your radio up loud playing, let's say, Barry Manilow, this vibration would rattle your rearview mirror or the area, and you'd say, "What's that?" And you'd look in your rearview mirror and see that it was a cop car. Now, the reason I said if you had Barry Manilow playing loud, it's not because I think you are a Barry Manilow fan necessarily, but here's the dilemma. It strikes me that if somebody's there playing hip-hop or rap or techno really loud with the real heavy bass beat, even disco with a real heavy bass beat, you're already getting vibration. So the question is, does the vibration of this siren stand out over and above the vibration from people that are blasting their ears with heavy bass lines already? And the article did not address that. That was in this morning's Washington Post. There's something going on, finally, about Darfur. Now, I don't mean that they're actually solving the problem, but Libya is hosting an international meeting this week to deal with Darfur, to bring together the various sides. Now, the bad news is that some of the Janjaweed militia leaders, who are the perpetrators of this, along with the Sudanese government, they are not, they didn't agree to show up, or they agreed and then they backed out or something. But this is actually being run by Gaddafi, I guess, at this point. But he's hosting it anyway. And at least they're having talks. Darfur is going to go down as, well, the big shame of the Clinton administration was the Rwandan genocide. Some people think it was Monica. No, I would say, was it 650 people murdered and systematically murdered in Rwanda in a genocide? Maybe it was more than that. I've lost track of the numbers. I'd say that was a bigger shame, a bigger blot on the Clinton administration than Monica. Although we spent a heck of a lot more time worrying about Monica, didn't we? But now, the Bush administration's major shame in the area of genocide is going to be Darfur. There are other black eyes in foreign policy. But this whole thing started early in 2003. It became clear through reports from people on the ground that a rebel group had attacked a government police station and then began this rebellion.
Now, it was a year and a half later, in late September, that Colin Powell, as Secretary of State, was the first U.S. official to describe this as a genocide. Powell said on September 9th, 2004, quote, I concluded, that genocide has been committed in Darfur and that the government of Sudan and the Janjaweed bear responsibility, and genocide may still be occurring. That was September of 2004. We're now 3 years past that since the Bush administration declared this a genocide, and we have had a lot of powerful words. We haven't done much. Now, I know we're stretched thin, but it's interesting how we don't send in the Marines when something like this happens. Now, admittedly, it's not an area that we care about strategically and all of that, but it's something we ought to care about morally. And so, really, this is a pretty shameful episode. And since there's meetings going on right now, I talk about this every once in a while, and I know it depresses the audience. So I'm going to talk about it this one more time. So let's see. Let's go back to 2006. President Bush said in 2006 that, quote, it's going to require a NATO stewardship. There has to be consequences for people abusing their fellow citizens. And then that was in early 2006. In late 2006, a year ago, Bush was speaking again at the United Nations, and he said, quote, if the Sudanese government does not approve this peacekeeping force quickly, the United Nations must act. Your lives and the credibility of the United Nations is at stake. And then this summer, when Bush imposed new sanctions on the Sudanese companies to try and force the Sudanese government to accept international peacekeepers in Darfur. For too long, the people of Darfur have suffered at the hands of a government that is complicit in the bombing, murder, and rape of innocent civilians. Well, that's all good, but where is the unilateral president that we've come to know so well in this country? He's not taken unilateral action. Another interesting article in today's Washington Post was about the tremendous number of guns that are being used in Mexico, particularly right across the border in Tijuana. The drug cartels are going at it and killing each other at an unbelievable pace. There's something like, I don't know, is it 1,200, 4,000? I've lost track of what the number was. A tremendous number of people have been killed in the drug wars in Mexico. And believe it or not, 100% of the drug-related killings are believed to be occurring with weapons that were smuggled from the United States. These are U.S. weapons bought in the Southwest and smuggled across the border by various people. And so this border problem flows both ways. You know, I was listening to Glenn Beck tonight. Was it on his radio show tonight? No, it was his TV show tonight. No, it was his radio show this afternoon, and he was just whining and whining, as so many conservatives do, about the mainstream media and how they're not covering what's going on the border. And we've got huge problems. And do you think they spend any? No, they don't spend any time on it. And he was talking about the fact that there are these, is it rape trees? There's smugglers who brag about the number of women they've raped. He talked about this and what a crime it is, and it's something should be done. But are the mainstream media talking about it? And I had just finished reading this long, detailed article on the guns being used in the drug trade. And so it's just interesting that, and he's saying, do they put that on the front page? No. Well, it turns out this article was on the front page. Now, he probably would find some other fault with it, like it's a conspiracy on the part of the Washington Post to blame the killings on the U.S. or something because these are guns smuggled from the U.S. But, you know, this is, he was saying that there's no reporter with the guts to go and get the story and actually do serious reporting and then report it. And there's no newspapers or news shows that'll put it on. And I just finished reading it. Anyway, interesting article in the Washington Post today because it is out of control. These drug cartels are using AK-47s. They've got the kinds of weapons that are being used in the war in Iraq, and the police are outgunned, and that is a serious problem, a very serious problem. And let's see, a couple of last items here before we move on to our number one topic of the night, the current state of America under the Bush administration in terms of our Constitution and our rights and how that battle is playing out and who's sticking up for the Constitution. Two things. One is that a former Attorney General, Dick Thornburgh, who was Attorney General in Republican administrations under Reagan and Bush, accused the Justice Department last week of prosecuting a prominent Pennsylvania Democrat for political reasons. This is a former Attorney General making this charge. Right? And this is just one of a series of cases that House Democrats have singled out in these hearings that suggest that the GOP was meddling in what went on at the Justice Department. And so I don't know, you know, where this will all go, and I don't need to spend a lot of time on it tonight, and this is not about bashing Alberto Gonzalez or whatever. But when a former attorney general under a Republican administration steps forward and says that politics drove the prosecution of a Democratic politician, that is big news. And the Washington Post put it on page 3 last week. But, this is the same Washington Post that the people like Glenn Beck always accuse of burying the good news and putting news that harms what he perceives to be his interests on the front page. The other thing that was on page 3 last Wednesday's Washington Post was the disagreement on missile defense. So, as you may know, President Bush has been pushing to put a missile defense system in Europe. And if you listen to my show regularly, you know my view on that. This is nuts. It doesn't work yet. He insisted on deploying it before the 2000 and was it the 2004 election? November 2004? I think it was. Which was absurd. It had flunked at least half the tests that had been run with it. And yet he continued to say we have to deploy this. We're spending $8 billion a year on it when we know the threat is coming from someplace else, not from missiles. We can't stop the Soviet missiles or the Russian missiles if they decided to launch all their missiles. The Chinese aren't going to launch a missile at the mainland. And so we worried for a while about North Korea. And now we're supposed to believe that we're going to put a missile defense in Eastern Europe to protect Poland and other countries from Iranian missiles? I mean, that's just not a grown-up position. And there's a little split in the administration. Apparently, Defense Secretary Gates doesn't think that makes a lot of sense either because he says he wants definitive proof of the Iranian threat before we go ahead. So finally, we may have an adult in the Bush administration that's going to recommend that we do something a little bit smarter here. We shall see whether they all catch on or not. In any case, we're going to take a short break, and the Andy Finn Show will be back right after this.